Christmas, festive times, holiday seasons, whatever you want to call it, Nolan. It's here on the main show. Are you as excited as I am?
Capitalism, consumerism, no. Fake trees, no. And materialism.
Why are you so miserable?
I haven't been visited by three ghosts yet.
Not yet, not just yet. Do we have to wait until Christmas Eve for you to get into that spirit?
I will be in the Christmas spirit when I am, when it is snowy outside and I'm watching Doctor Who.
Well, it has already been snowy outside.
Yeah, for you guys, maybe, not for us.
Oh, well, there's a turn up. England getting snow before Scotland, how does that work?
It's just another way your country's stolen from mine.
That seems like an unreasonable, angry thing to say. Anyway.
People in London, though, not Manchester. Manchester is the Glasgow of England. I like you guys.
I'm glad we got that cleared up. Very important topic of conversation, of course. Anyway, it is episode 188 of It's a Wonderful Podcast today, but more importantly, it is the first episode of this festive season on the main show. So we're doing what some people consider a Christmas movie because of one particular part of this movie. But other people wouldn't consider a Christmas movie because it's not entirely about Christmas. Where do you fall, Nolan, on the debate of what constitutes a Christmas movie? Does a Christmas movie have to be entirely about Christmas, or can it be a Christmas movie, like in this movie's case, that is only partially set at Christmas, however the bit that's set at Christmas is arguably the most well-received part?
Morgan, I'll answer that question with a little bit of trivia about our friendship. What's my favourite Christmas movie?
Die Hard.
No, I am not an incel on the internet.
Wonderful Life, the namesake of this show.
No.
I don't know this answer. Is it Home Alone 2?
No, it's not Home Alone 2. It's not Elf.
It's not Elf. Is it? I hope it's not a Christmas story either. I don't like a Christmas story. You're giving me a hint. The Twinkle Twinkle Little Star. I really don't know what you're trying to hint at. How the Grinch Stole Christmas?
No.
It could be anything, really. Any version of A Christmas Carol. We could be here all day, Nolan. You might.
All right, I'm gonna put this dead reindeer out of its misery. It's Edward Scissorhands.
Okay.
How did you get Twinkle Twinkle Little Star from me clearly doing a scissors thing?
I don't think you were clearly doing a scissors thing. Not that anybody can see this, but Nolan was doing something weird with his hands that, to me, looked like he was fluttering his fingers. So I then go from fluttering to twinkle, and then twinkle, twinkle, little star. But that's not a movie. I don't know where my mind went.
Yay. I need to get better at my scissoring, is what you're telling me.
What a ridiculous statement to make. I need you to get better at telling me why Edward Scissorhands is your favourite Christmas movie, but explain your reasoning on the Christmas movie debate of a Christmas movie doesn't exactly have to be all about Christmas for it to be a good Christmas movie.
No, I think as long as it's like horror movies, as long as it has an element of what Christmas means in, like, I guess the marketing sense of Christmas, which is the whole family togetherness thing, then yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we've hit the nail on the head with Meet Me in St. Louis then, which is entirely about family togetherness.
Yes, and you have your own Judy Garland as one of your co-hosts, so.
Are you suggesting there that you are in any way resembling Judy Garland? Because that, again, is a ridiculously unreasonable thing to say.
No, a Judy Garland is what people in the queer community refer to themselves as.
I mean, that also does make a little bit of sense. That's me not thinking properly. That works then. That works. Judy Garland's here. Hi, Judy. How are you?
She's currently dead, so unless you've got a Ouija board, I don't think we're getting her on here.
The ghost of Judy Garland is not coming. The ghost of Judy Garland, unfortunately, I think, would be a very tragic character. As, to be fair, Judy Garland was in life anyway, but maybe not, to be fair, in 1944 when Meet Me in St. Louis came out. This was still...
when Morgan was only 30 years old.
Exactly, but this was also when Judy Garland... before Judy Garland became messed around, shall we say. And through no real fault of her own, as we know, her story is incredibly sad, ultimately. But she's wonderful. She's a joyful presence on screen to watch, even when she is at her saddest. You even think of something like A Star Is Born, when Judy Garland is 1954, and that's when Judy Garland in her personal life is very all over the place. But in that movie, you still smile to see Judy Garland on screen. She always has that presence. She certainly has that presence for me in this movie. And I also have to ask you a very important question, because the movie never really clarifies this either. Do you pronounce it St. Louis or St. Louis?
I'd always go with St. Louis.
Good, because so would I, and so would people I know from St. Louis.
St. Louis sounds like the autobiography of a once-loved comedian who has since become a twat.
That's a very niche thing to say, but okay.
Yeah. For all my comedy friends in there, yeah. I did. This movie was very delightful. I had it on in the background while I was studying, and every so often I would be tapping my foot along with the songs. I recognize a fair amount of them, not from the movie specifically, but I just... okay, so one that immediately sticks out to me, because I believe it was in a Looney Tunes cartoon or an episode of Tom and Jerry. I'm sure Skip to My Lou was in like a DVD I watched as a kid, sung by animated characters.
I mean, I would buy that being the case. I don't quite know what you would be referring to. I don't recall anything like that myself. I know Skip to My Lou from here's a random thing that is only something I could possibly say on this show, from a football chant.
Of course,
when United fans used to sing about Scottish winger Lou Macari, and it would be Lou, skip to my Lou, skip to my Lou Macari, and it would just work.
I since have now looked it up. I know it. Skip to My Lou, in fact, is not a song created for this movie. It is, in fact, from the 1800s and is a common dance song for partner stealing. I assume this is I assume it's how people in the South stole each other's dates.
Well, that makes perfect sense in the scene it shows from this movie when they're all dancing with each other and they all swap partners, and then it's you know, Judy Garland, it's Esther trying to get that one particular partner, and it doesn't quite work, but then it does, and it all gets very romancy in the end, doesn't it? But it does. Yes, it's very catchy, of course. Skip to My Lou is very catchy, and I love it in this movie, I really do. But it is one of those, I mean, this was the first time I'd watched Meet Me in St. Louis, so that's a nice one to, you know, tick off the old list. I always like doing that, especially with musicals, because musicals are such well-known movies that you feel bad, or at least I feel bad, for having not seen as many as I would have liked, and certainly as many of the big name ones, i.e. this. But now I have, so I'm excited about that. And it is a case of a musical that's kind of filled with songs that you maybe didn't necessarily know were from this musical, but you just knew them as musical songs anyway. I mean, maybe you did. And to be fair, I think I did. I think that was the only one that I didn't know, talking... skipped to my loo.
Are we talking about the same song here? What? All right, okay. The one that I assumed that you knew already was Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Yes, I did know Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas was in this movie. That's why I chose this movie to do now during festive season. I also knew the trolley song, but which I didn't know ridiculous. Any of the other songs.
The trolley song is ridiculous. It is so...
Do you not like it?
As someone who likes his time on public transport to be quiet, with no one touching me or coming near me, the only sound I have to hear is of the driver telling me my stop is approaching. The trolley song is every youth in Scotland pressing the buttons several times, 10 times over, singing at the top of their lungs. It's every junkie that gets on the bus without paying for a ticket. It's that song.
Nolan, the trolley is not a bus.
It is. It's the closest thing to a bus that it has.
It is the closest thing to a bus in this movie, yes, that's true. But I like the song. Do you not find yourself getting it stuck in your head, though? Isn't this what a good musical song should do?
Yes and no. I mean, you can have an earworm song, but that doesn't mean that it's good. Like, fucking... What's a song that's came out recently that's stuck in my head all the time that is an actual piece? Yeah. Okay, I'm not going to say the name of the song, but there was a certain song that was so popular during the pandemic, and I won't say the name of it out of fear of horrifying you, but it was the most popular selling song in this pandemic that does get stuck in your head and is ridiculous, and it's going to confuse future generations who read about our history books.
I feel like I know what you're getting at, and I am deeply offended, but still, I'm not talking about actual released music. I'm talking about musical songs from musicals.
All musical songs are earworms, even the good ones, the bad ones, they all have to be earwormy, otherwise they don't get picked.
Or slow and emotional and romancy, which I also like, and especially when Judy Garland's singing it, because it just works.
Yeah, I'll give her one thing. The Boy Next Door, which I thought was a song sung by Hugh Jackman for a start, so I was very confused. Turns out it's a same named song from a different musical called The Boy from Oz.
Yes, it's not Hugh Jackman does not show up in this movie at all. That would be weird.
I mean, if they remade it, he probably would.
No, I don't like what was the dad?
Any of the male leads.
Father Smith.
Anything that keeps him from doing The Greatest Showman 2.
Which I'm surprised hasn't happened yet, to be perfectly honest with you.
But
yeah, The Boy Next Door's a great song.
That's probably my favourite song in the movie, because it's a great emotional shift in the film itself. It works with the pacing. It's a good song in and of itself. And Judy Garland, I mean... Now I have something to compete with for Somewhere Over the Rainbow as my favourite Judy Garland movie music song.
I mean, that is a bold statement. That really is, but I appreciate the love for the song The Boy Next Door. I feel like we should get into a little bit of maybe what this movie is about. It isn't one of those movies. It's one of those movies that I really kind of like, Nolan, because it doesn't have a massive detailed plot that goes this way and that, and you don't know what's happening because you're confused. It sets up the scenario of the Smith family in St. Louis. It's the year before the St. Louis World's Fair, so everybody's very excited for that. It's like 1903, and it is the lives of the Smith family, the growing up of its older children, the familial relationships there, the coming into romance, the struggling with heartache, the having to potentially leave your hometown and everything you've always known, and the feelings that come with that, the emotions that come with that, the then journeying back to that hometown and having one last hurrah there, as it were, before permanently leaving. It's ultimately a low-key coming-of-age movie, and I appreciated it for that. Because I always think the best thing about coming-of-age movies, Nolan, is that they don't feel plotty. Because they are very, very person-driven. They are very, very character-driven. And this is a very, very character-driven movie musical. It's a very, very scenario-driven movie musical. Also, the fact that it is a musical and a lot of the time is obviously dedicated to musical numbers, and it's only like an hour 45. It doesn't even give time for any detailed plot because it would feel, I suppose it would feel rushed. So the plot you end up having, which is a fairly simple romance plot at the end of the day, mainly between Judy Garland and her neighbour John Truitt, is all you need. And it's all you want. Because this is a movie you put on to put a smile on your face. This is a movie you put on to whisk yourself away to the golden age of movie musicals. MGM, who made this movie, are always good at, you know, their musicals are always good to go back and watch with that in mind. There's no more transformative movie musical than an MGM musical, because it just takes you completely away. It's escapism. It's perfect for doing that kind of thing. And it's so ultimately joyful in the end, which is, again, another good reason why I think it's such a good Christmas watch. Because you like to have joy at Christmas, as miserable as you may be, Nolan. You've got to admit, it's, even if you have to force it on yourself sometimes, and I have had to do this in the past, being happy, ultimately, around Christmas time is the best way to end any year. It really is. In whatever way that may be. And if it takes watching movies like this to do it, watch Meet Me in St. Louis every day from now until the day. Because you'll end up with a smile on your face. You can't possibly not do. That's what I love most about this.
Well, that is a tough act to follow.
Well, that was a little monologue I just went on. That's all. I mean, are you in the Christmas spirit yet, Nolan? I don't even know. I mean, it is still only early in December, of course, but are you embracing that yet?
To be honest, I was hoping to be at a Christmas dinner tonight with my theatre group, but since I have a cold, I cannot attend. Hence, no. We moved this recording up. So maybe I'm a little bit bitter about that, but I don't hate Christmas. I hate what people have done to Christmas, more so than anything else. But Christmas movies are one of the things I enjoy. I mean, there's an art to mastering a Christmas story, and I don't mean the movie that you clearly hate, but it's something I've always been into.
I don't hate a Christmas story, Nolan. I just feel it's weird, and I don't get why the entire movie is about a small child wanting a gun. It rubs me the wrong way.
Oh. I feel there's writing a story set at Christmas is a very difficult task. You think it would be easy, but like I've tried it before and it's so difficult. And when you see something like this that pulls it off just so smoothly, even though it's not, I mean, some people argue it's not a Christmas movie, I think that's to be commended for. And to be honest, the person I'm paying attention to most in this is Judy Garland. But there's all these little details in it that I really like that feel Christmassy to me, like the kids going out, hanging with their friends, the kids wanting to join in on the party and singing very inappropriate songs to make themselves appear grown up. that's kind of, that's like Christmas in my household. Like, you know, that's,
yeah,
that's you drinking brandy when you're 13, trying to appear adult.
And that, and you know, those scenes aren't even the scenes that are set at Christmas.
No, but they feel very Christmassy.
They do, and it's all because the entire movie is just so very focused on family coming together and having this close-knit family, which for a lot of people is what Christmas means to them, isn't it? It's coming together. You may have problems in your family. You may hate some of your family members, to be perfectly blunt. You may really not get on with near enough everybody in your family. But you still do it. You still come together at Christmas as a family, despite all that. Or a lot of people do this. I'm talking general terms. But people still do that. You almost ask yourself why people still do that in families that may not get on with each other very much at all. Why they still get together for Christmas. Because ultimately, that's just what you do. That's so ingrained into the Western culture to come together as a family at Christmas that if you ever see families coming together and having a nice time with each other in any movie, there is something internal within people, or at least Western people, that think, oh, I wonder if it's a holiday. It might have nothing to do with Christmas in this movie or TV show or whatever that you're reading, watching, consuming. But it can still feel like Christmas, because family coming together is that. And little, like you said, little children, Margaret O'Brien in this movie playing Tootie, which I can't say because I say Tootie, and not, I'm not going to even attempt my American accent of the word Tootie, but I love her in this movie. She's great. She is the perfect bold 5-year-old that has to deal, ultimately, with a lot of change in this movie when they end up having to move to New York, and it gets very emotional, and that's where Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas comes in, which is, it's almost, it almost makes it the saddest song in the movie, when you think about it, it's a really uplifting song. It's one of my favourite Christmas songs. But there's a lot of different...
I would go as far to say it's the best Christmas song.
You think Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is the best Christmas song? That is a
I no doubt we're going to see on Twitter again the debates around Christmas songs and how they haven't aged well. But
oh yes,
Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is just, it's just one that works. You know, it's like no matter what mood you're in, no matter what key it's played in, no matter what kind of cover it is, that song just works.
My
I did not know it originated
version.
From this movie.
It did. It did. It was totally original for Meet Me in St. Louis. I should give credit, to be fair, to the person behind the music of this movie, but I appear to have lost the name, which is deeply annoying, obviously. It is directed by Vincente Minnelli, which I should point out, actually, because the set of this movie is where Vincente Minnelli met Judy Garland, and obviously they got married. And that's where Liza came from. So that's an important Hollywood... It's an important Hollywood culture movie for that reason as well, I suppose. But the music is... No... That's not the movie. Who is the music by? Oh dear. Right, well, I don't know. Who wrote the music? I feel like an idiot now.
It was adapted by a man named Roger Edens.
Oh, well, there we go. We'll anyway. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas was originally written for by this movie.
Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine.
There That's you go. Who wrote Thank it. You. There you go. Perfect.
Who, my favorite. I mean, you'll know it from the Frank Sinatra cover, I reckon.
No, my favorite cover is the Ella Fitzgerald one.
Ooh, that's a show.
I like the Ella Fitzgerald one. Every fool and his mother has done a cover of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and near enough every classic Christmas song you could possibly think of. But yeah, Ella Fitzgerald is actually my favourite one. I mean, this one, obviously, Judy Garland's is pretty up there. But it's very much...
Of course Michael Bublé's done one.
No, we don't care about Michael Bublé and his stupid modern Christmas. I really don't. This version of the song in this movie is... It's more... I mean, it fits with the scene, it fits with the kind of melancholy, reminiscing atmosphere of this particular scene between Judy Garland and Margaret O'Brien, Esther and Tootie, who are kind of acknowledging the change that's going to happen in their lives by moving away from St. Louis and being very upset about it, but having a merry little Christmas despite that. So it holds more weight when you watch it in this movie, so it feels kind of more dramatic in that sense. But Ella Fitzgerald's version of the song is, as you would expect, a little bit jazzier. So it has a little bit of a bounce to it. So I appreciate that about that. But we're not necessarily here to talk about covers of Christmas songs. We're here to talk about Meet Me in St. Louis. I don't know. Is there any other particular aspect of this movie that you happen to latch yourself onto?
I really like the moment where the kids on Halloween have that whole misunderstanding about killing the neighbors with flour, because it seems like such a kid thing to do. Like, it's like, it reminds me of things like the floor is made of lava.
Yeah.
And it creates this huge funny misunderstanding around, I can't remember her character's name, Judy Garland's character and this guy John meeting.
Yeah.
And I think that's just so funny. That feels like, oh, we'll tell this story at the wedding. Yeah, we were actually met because you tried to get killed with flour.
It is. It's fun. I like the Halloween masks that they actually use. They're kind of creepy. For 1903, these children really go hard for Halloween. I appreciate that. You don't think of 110, 120 years ago, really, I suppose. 120 years ago, Halloween costumes being particularly phenomenal. But I appreciated the Halloween costumes that were on display during the Halloween scene.
In you could have just dressed up as H.P. Lovecraft.
Well, that would be quite easy to do, wouldn't it? Just put a suit on and look weird. And spurt nonsense.
So all of the Scottish people in that time would have been considered cosplaying H.P. Lovecraft.
Well, no, because I still think at that point all of the Scottish people had huge ginger beards, didn't they? And masses of long hair. And played bagpipes. Everyone in Scotland.
Played bagpipes whilst eating haggis, singing O Flower exactly. of Scotland, and drinking whiskey.
Perfect. The image of the Scotsman, right there, as displayed by a Scotsman himself. So, you've heard it from the perfect source, I think, there. No,
The only time we do that is after Rangers and Celtic games, anyway.
Yes, but we're not allowed to prefer one or the other, are we? If we're not born into it, Nolan, because it causes fights.
Nah, yeah, people legit get killed. People do not get killed, thankfully, over Meet Me in St. Louis, except with flour, which is such a funny little detail.
I wouldn't like to have flour blown in my face, though. I really wouldn't.
Nah, it's very unnecessary. That's the part I enjoy least about baking, within the flower is just fucking everywhere.
Come on, we have to make this cake. But first, we have to actually drown the kitchen in flour in order to make the cake. Why?
I will tell you a funny story about this.
Please do.
So you know how you sift flour before you make a cake, right?
Sure, like I've ever made a cake in my entire life.
Well, you for baking bread or whatever, usually for most cases you have to sift the flour. I thought one day, like last Christmas actually, I would buy myself a nice mesh sieve so it could make the job easier. It arrived 2 weeks late, was not a large sieve, but was in fact three smaller ones, and I haven't been bothered to buy a large one yet. So now we have to sift flour 50 grams at a time.
Oh, for God's sake. That is a very you thing to do. Totally.
Do not buy your sieves off eBay, is what I will say to that.
I do not know what to say to that other than just big sigh, because that's just... That's it. That is honestly all I can say to that. I was going to talk about a scene that I particularly loved, actually, in this movie, which is I'll refer to it as the turning out the lights, where it's quite an extended scene, actually, but it's right after a party, and Esther Judy Garland has decided tonight she's spoken to her sister. Her sister, played by Mary Astor, by the way. Who Mary Astor was in, God, I hope Mary Astor was the one in, well, she was the one in The Maltese Falcon. Was Mary Astor the one in, why am I confusing Mary Astor with Mary? I'm not confusing Mary Astor with Mary Philbin, am I?
Hey, it's a Christmas movie. You can't get your Marys mixed up.
I know, that's bad. Who am I confusing Mary Astor with? I'm confusing Mary Astor with Mary Philbin, aren't I? Please don't tell me I'm confusing Mary Astor with Mary Philbin. Please. Please. I think I am. Anyway, Mary Astor is in The Maltese Falcon, so there, shush. Mary Astor plays Anna, Judy Garland's sister, in this movie. They've had a conversation. It's been decided by Judy Garland that she's going to let John Truitt kiss her tonight. Oh, Nolan, it's very Little Women-ish. Is there not like a weird element of Little Women to this movie as well, even though Little Women's like 50 years before in terms of time or of setting?
But I mean, the main source of entertainment in the 40s would have been books, so it could clearly have taken inspiration from it.
That's true. I think it was a book itself, though, maybe in St. Louis, weirdly enough. It's remembered, obviously, for this musical, but.
It was adapted from a series of short stories.
Oh, okay.
Well, so that probably explains the structure of the movie, yeah.
Yeah, it's because it is structured in seasons, in spring, summer, autumn, and winter. And the winter's a season's actually like this in St. Louis, where they have like perfect picture postcard seasons.
The winter's so
wintry and the summer's so summery.
I mean, I'm the wrong person to ask. You should be asking Billy.
I should be asking Billy Pollahan, actually. Yes, he does live there. Billy, seasons in St. Louis? That's the question.
He would know all about seasonings. He's a baker.
No, this works even better. I bet he's drowned the kitchen in flour several times a day.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Don't use too much flour. Don't blow it in people's faces either. Anyway, what was I talking about? The turning out the lights. It's been decided. Esther's going to let John Truitt kiss her tonight. And then she plays all coy, like she doesn't know who he is at the party. And it's very fun. And then it's the end of the night. And John's the last one to go. And she's kind of forcing him to stay a little bit, not forcing, but, you know, kind of pulling him back to stay a little bit longer. carry on the conversation. And she asked him if you would like to go around the house turning out the lights with me. Oh, let's make it all romantic and dim the lights. It's so perfect. I love how long this scene takes as well. It really builds up this romantic tension so, so well. Moving from room to room.
Turning out the gas lamps.
Lights. Exactly. You know, and if teaching each other how to do it properly, then, oh, no, it's this one up here. You feel like this entire scene is going to rather satisfyingly end with your big romantic first kiss. Does it do that, Nolan? No, it doesn't. John Truitt acts like a moron and runs out the door. I just found it hilarious.
Sounds better than most of my first dates.
No, it sounds exactly like most of your first dates, don't it? Because you try and you try and you try and you try. And then the other person just goes, ah, okay, it was really great to meet you, bye. That's how this ends. I love that atypicalness, I suppose, of the way that particular scene ends. Because you are expecting, think about it, this is a feel-good movie musical from the 40s in, oh, it has to be said, Nolan, beautiful Technicolor. Like, Technicolor's always good, but, oh, this, it's popping, to use a disgracefully, I should say, modern term, apparently. I don't really use words
pops.
Like that. But it does pop. The Technicolor pops like a lollipop. That didn't make sense. It pops like a bag of pop rocks.
I swear that's a Lil Wayne song.
Oh, I hope it isn't. Oh, dear. The musical stylings have just changed dramatically from Meet Me in St. Louis to Lil Wayne in the case of 5 seconds. I've now forgotten what I was talking about. Yeah, the Technicolor is absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning in this movie.
You love Technicolor, don't you?
I do love Technicolor. Movies never look better than when they're in Technicolor. There's too much colour. And you can never have too much colour. Every colour is in its boldest form. And that is the best way for a movie to look.
You have been on about Technicolor since we started the show. I'm starting to think it's like a character trait. I do like it. It's just, I do like it. I love how whenever Technicolor even shows up, you just have to mention it.
I do have to mention it because it's what draws me into some movies, the fact they look the way they do. Looks like a painting. Technicolor always looks like a painting, an early Technicolor. I mean, I suppose it's not early, is it? But it's earlier, 1944. We've not quite hit the 50s and, you know, using Technicolor with Panavision and VistaVision and all its horrendously large widescreen formats. But, oh my, it's like The Wizard of Oz Technicolor. It's the exact same situation. The colours just look so beautifully bold. And again, it just adds to the escapist feeling, because real places don't look like that. Fantasy places look like that. This fantasy ideal of this town of St. Louis looks like that. That's where you want to be. So that's where you go when you watch this movie. It's just, it adds that extra layer on top of it that draws me in. Technicolor always does that. I do love it. I obviously love shadowy black and white as well, to go totally the other way. But it's a real draw for me sometimes to know that particularly a musical, because I know a musical is going to be happy when it's in Technicolor. You can't have a sad musical in Technicolor. Doesn't work. Colours are too bright. You have to have dim things going on. Maybe that's too narrow-minded. I don't know.
No one could ever accuse you of being open-minded with the amount of taste you have in movies.
No one could accuse me of being open-minded.
That came out wrong. No one could ever accuse you of not being open-minded.
I would be questioning whether people would accuse me of being open. Who would accuse someone of being open-minded? I know you said it wrong. I'm just questioning that now. I don't like you. Stop being open-minded. I accuse you of being open-minded. Where my brain is going this evening, Nolan, I really don't know. I'm all over the place. I'm having fun. It's Christmas. Allow me a bit of nonsense, please.
I am not the nonsense gatekeeper. I bring most of the nonsense to this show.
Well, are you bringing any more nonsense, Nolan?
Yes.
Do you like the turning out of the lights as well, though? Do you feel the romantic tension in that scene?
I do, indeed. But there is one thing that I am going to bring the nonsense on, and I know you're going to hate me for this. But whenever I see Judy Garland in a movie that's not The Wizard of Oz, I just see Dorothy for some reason.
Why? She's not even looking like Dorothy. She's got auburn hair in that weird square fringe thing. Doesn't even look anything like Dorothy.
I reckon it's just associating her with Dorothy for most of my life.
I mean, yes, that's fair. Wait, are you expecting the Scarecrow to turn up in this movie? Is that what you're saying?
I thought that's who the guy was who the kids were knocking on the door for. But not like the guy who played the Scarecrow, like he's just an actual Scarecrow.
Yeah. One of the kids should have dressed up as a Scarecrow, just as a little bit of an Easter egg. That wouldn't happen.
Or a lion and a tin man.
Yeah. I think they could have gotten away with doing that. That's just like putting, you know, that one dude dressed as Yoda in E.T. It's just the same.
Considering the experience Judy Garland had on The Wizard of Oz, I don't think she would have been down for it.
Well, look, okay. Judy Garland, yes, we know. We know had a very, very difficult life. But I think what is most important to remember about Judy Garland is that she was able to bring such joy to so many people, to everybody, with her movies, with her performances in these movies, with her singing voice, with her persona, with everything.
She's the only...
Whilst dealing with all of that horrible things, and that has to be commended over anything. That's how I view it, at least.
She's the only America's Sweetheart type actor who I believe is doing it not as an act. Like, that's just how she was.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I get that a lot. Yeah. It's good.
It's good. So, favorite song in the movie, and you better not say the trolley song.
Right. It has to kind of be Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. It really does. It's because, for me, it feels like, with the whole movie, yes, it's a romance story between Esther and John. Yes, okay, it is. But really, the whole movie is about the sisters' relationships with each other. And Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is the emotional, dramatic climax of the relationship between Esther and Tootie. So that's why, for me, that one is my favourite song in this movie. Like you said before, though, I think The Boy Next Door is a great song. I do like the trolley song because it's been in my head ever since I watched the movie. It just catches you. I've been shouting clang, clang, clang at people and they haven't been following it up with Goes the Trolley, and I've been getting sad.
Well, you're not really supposed to do that in Aldi.
No, not... I mean, that's a fair point. I have been going up to strangers.
I don't know, do you have McGill's bus down in England?
No, and I have no idea. You're talking in some sort of strange language now.
Okay, well, you have buses in England.
Yes, buses exist. Yes, that is true. Trolleys don't exist.
You have overpriced buses, for a start.
Well, who am I to judge the bus service? I'm not king of the buses.
Yeah, you either take the trains or you drive.
I do drive most places, yes. I don't think that's a strange thing to say. Anyway. Why do you not like the trolley song? Right, come on. I know we spoke about
this. It feels like one of those songs where it's like, you know when you watch a musical and there's that one song that stands out where it's like, okay, we have to get the audience involved with this and you have to be singing it. It feels like that kind of organized, fun, forced song that really rubs me the wrong way. And I don't just have it for the trolley song. There's a song like that in almost every musical for me that is just forcibly upbeat and it ends up having the opposite effect.
Do you have other examples?
Yes, let me think. What's the one in High School Musical? Bop to the Top in High School Musical?
That's not a valid movie musical. I don't care what people who are 18 years old now say that doesn't exist as a real musical. I'm talking about proper musicals, Nolan, as in musicals we would cover on this show.
I think Dear Evan Hansen had one, but Dear Evan Hansen's mostly ballads.
Again, yeah,
that's an actual stage musical, so
it might be a stage musical. It's also, yes, okay, I haven't seen that movie. I'm 100% not going to see that movie. What a weird looking movie it is.
I thought you were going to say what a weird looking man.
Well, yes, also what a weird looking man playing a 12-year-old, is it? I don't know.
A teenager.
Why? That movie, Nolan, is a joke. I haven't seen the movie, but that movie is a cultural joke. So, it is not valid in your argument of every movie musical has an upbeat song that is thrown in there just to get forced happiness. I do not believe there is such a thing as forced happiness when it comes to movie musicals. You just don't want to embrace it. You just don't want to sing along. This is a problem of you, not a problem of the song.
But I had a cold while watching it, and I was like, for fuck's sake. This is a problem with you.
There's nothing wrong with it.
It's a problem with me, just like most things.
I think you should go to a city that has a trolley or cable car system, and you should sing this song very loudly whilst riding on it.
I do not think that's a good idea. Glasgow actually has a tram. So
no, not a tram. It's not a tram. A trolley is something that is powered by a rail underneath the ground.
So a tram.
It's not a tram. No, a tram's above the ground, isn't it? A tram, where's the tram's rail? No, yes, the tram's on a rail, but where does the tram get its power from? That weird line above the tram. The trolley is it's like got a hand brake on it that a human being has to use. It's like what they have in Disneyland.
So you want me to go to Disneyland? They sing
the trolley song at Disneyland.
Of course they do. Disneyland, the epitome of forced fun.
I don't like this. I was expecting fun and joy, and you're just bringing sadness and cynicism. Disneyland, the epitome of forced fun. I mean, yes, okay, sure, but also, why not have fun at Disneyland if you want to?
Have fun at Disneyland if you want, but if you're
over the age of 20 and you're having fun at Disneyland without any kids, I question what you do in your life.
That's a very dangerous thing to say. I have been to Disneyland over the age of 20 and had fun.
By yourself?
Not by myself. No, who goes to Disneyland by themselves?
The people who I am targeting in that accusation.
Well, yes, that's a fair point. Then I do question who goes to Disneyland by themselves.
And they're probably singing the trolley song.
Possibly. But I feel like Disney, you can't go to a theme park on your own. That is one place you cannot go to on your own.
I'd go to Universal Studios on my own.
On your own? No, you wouldn't. You'd be bored out of your mind. I don't care how much stuff's going on, you need other people at a theme park. I don't care how good the theme park is.
Is this your way of asking me to go to Disneyland with you?
Well, I think that would be fun.
A little It's a Wonderful podcast company trip.
Yeah. That'd be great. Oh, we'd have so much fun. We could watch the people sing the trolley song and I could laugh at you. That'd be great.
Be in the corner. Cringing so hard that my face would become a fist.
Oh, for God's sake. Fine. Do you know what we haven't actually... There's a song we haven't actually talked about that's in this movie, Nolan. It is, in fact, what you would consider the title song, which is actually pronounced Meet Me in St. Louis. So it's Meet Me in St. Louis, Louis, Meet Me at the Fair. That one.
That's like just that one? So they could... I like that one, but they really just pronounced it that way so they can get the rhyming scheme to work.
I mean, yes, that's true.
It's does like, do you call it New Orleans or do you call it Nolans?
Well, if I were to call it Norlins, then I would be doing a ridiculously inaccurate impression of somebody from that city. So I call it New Orleans. Because that's how it's pronounced in my mind and in my voice. Because I'm not Creole.
No, you are not.
So I don't. I'm not. I'm very much not, am I? Look at me. Look at me, listen to me. Am I in any way Creole?
You're about as Creole as a Rustler's hamburger.
Sure. I'll agree with that. I don't know what that is.
It's the...
That's just a type of burger.
It's the microwavable burgers that you get at, like, supermarkets.
Who puts burgers in the microwave? I really question that. I understand. And look, there are plenty of things you can put in the microwave. I, and this will come as sacrilege to some people, have been known to warm a cup of tea up in the microwave.
No!
Not while it's being made, but like afterwards, if I've forgotten about it, just go, that can go in there for a minute.
I'd rather drink it cold!
No, you can't drink cold tea. Conversation's gone silly.
My kettle's actually broken, so you know what I'm doing? Instead of microwaving tea, I have to boil water with a tea bag on the stove like a fucking madman. Because I can't afford a new kettle yet.
Please tell me you're just putting water in a pan and then the tea bag into the pan.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
And you're just having boiling tea on the stove that's just fully brewed tea. You're just pouring it. What are you doing? Are you sieving out the tea? Is that what you're doing?
No,
you're
getting
one of your tiny little sieves and putting it over your mug and then pouring the boiling pan of tea with the teabag in for some reason. Through the tiny sieve and into the mug. Is that what you're doing? Is that how you're now making tea? Because that is ridiculous.
Before adding a squeeze of honey and a little drop of oat milk to make the perfect cup of Earl Grey.
Stop. I can understand boiling water on the stove in a pan, obviously, because that's cooking. But don't make tea on the stove with the tea bag in the pan. That's weird. Please never do that. Oh, God. I'm disturbed. I'm disturbed. I need to go and watch this movie again to cheer myself up. I really do. I was actually very happy to have watched this movie for the first time, Nolan. Was it a first time watch for you as well?
It was a... I'd probably put it up there for a movie marathon on Christmas, so I'd be like, yeah, this is not bad. We'll stick it on if it's like on TCM or something, which it likely would be.
Yeah, there's some really good snowmen in this movie as well. Like, I was really impressed by the quality of the snowmen.
And thankfully, none of them are singing.
What's wrong with singing snowmen now? What have you got against Frosty the Snowman?
I was thinking more Olaf from Frozen, but...
Sure. Oh yeah, we don't like Olaf from Frozen. I don't even think about Olaf from Frozen. I just think about Frosty the Snowman.
Can I put him on the stove?
Frosty the Snowman. Who? No, Frosty the Snowman or Olaf from Frozen?
Olaf from Frozen.
Yes, but just don't put a tea bag in. That's my issue with it. You can do whatever you want with water on the stove. So you don't have anything against Frosty the Snowman?
No. Me and Frosty are like cool buds, you know.
What about the snowman that has the Walking in the Air song? What about that snowman?
He can go fuck himself with the stick.
Why? I don't know. Why do you not like him?
Stop stealing Frosty's thunder, you dick.
It's a fair point, he does steal Frosty's thunder. These snowmen, I think, deserve to steal Frosty's thunder. These snowmen that they make in this movie are impeccable. Like, they're artistic. They make jokes about them as well. One of them... they call one of them the name of the girl who their brother got rejected by out of just... Let's all have a laugh at him for being an idiot. I like
that.
Sounds
like something I'd do.
That was fun.
Do you have a favourite movie snowman?
A favourite movie snowman? Jack Frost from the movie Jack Frost.
The one Michael Keaton played.
Exactly, yes. No, I don't know if I have a favourite movie snowman.
I'm surprised you've seen that movie.
It's a good snowman. I don't know. Good question. I'll have to think on it, Nolan. I'll have to think on that one. This one.
I thought you were going to say Jack Frost from the horror movie Jack Frost.
All that one, yeah. Or Jack Frost from the Santa Claus 3, who isn't actually a snowman, but is played by Martin Short, who I think looks like a snowman.
Just in real life, just... He looks like a human snowman.
Yeah, whatever that means.
I mean, he is quite pasty, to be fair.
He looks like he has coal for eyes and a carrot of a nose. He doesn't look anything like that. I don't know what I'm saying. I've lost my mind. Clearly. Nolan, unless you have anything else to say about Meet Me in St. Louis or anything remotely Christmas nonsense related, which apparently this episode has turned into, but why not? I think we might wrap it there. What do you say?
I say wrap it up like a Christmas present, and Christmas tea on the stove actually does work, so...
No.
Put a bit of frankincense and myrrh in there.
Myrrh?
I saw a frankincense and myrrh candle at the store today, and I was tempted.
You're not Jesus. As much as you might think you are, with your long, flowing hair and beard.
I do not think that. I am not Jared Leto.
That's where I was getting with that. Thank you for getting my joke about 2 minutes before I made it.
Ugh.
I appreciate you for that greatly. And I appreciate you for having this show today and making it very fun and starting festive season on It's a Wonderful Podcast, the main show, in the most glorious way possible by just simply enjoying ourselves, talking about a movie, and a great movie at that. Meet Me in St. Louis, 1944, Vincente Minnelli directing, Judy Garland, and Margaret O'Brien, and Mary Astor, who I may or may not have confused with Mary Philbin, but I think Mary Philbin was the one in Lon Chaney's Phantom of the Opera. I think that's Mary Philbin. I'm not dwelling on Mary's any longer, because as Nolan rightly said, there is only one Mary who means anything at Christmas.
Mary Berry?
And it is. Yes. It could be Mary Berry. I mean, I was going to go with Merry Christmas, to be honest with you. And just make a really bad pun joke. But that was ruined now. Oh, well. It depends if you're religious or not, to be fair, because there's obviously also that Mary who means things to people of a certain type. And you might be one of them. And that's fine. No issues. Don't know why I'm talking about that. Anyway, episode 188 of It's a Wonderful Podcast. Meet me in St. Louis. Like I have said, this isn't the only show you can find on the It's a Wonderful Podcast feed, though we, of course, have Morgan Hasn't Seen every Wednesday, where we're also talking holiday movies, festive movies, all throughout December. Festive movies are taking over both this show and Morgan Hasn't Seen. And this past Wednesday, me and Janine talked the Nora Ephron movie Mixed Nuts with Steve Martin, which is actually a probably more of a Christmas movie than this movie, but it's certainly nowhere near as good as this movie. It's a weird movie, and we had a very fun discussion on it. We also, of course, have Machine Mondays on Mondays, funnily enough, with Janine talking all her Schmodown things. It is, of course, the Schmodown Spectacular this weekend as well. So I don't believe Janine is going to have a new episode this coming Monday, so in a few days, because we are working on a extra special big guest-filled episode for the week after for a full Schmodown Spectacular breakdown discussion there, so that should be exciting. But Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we have you covered on the It's a Wonderful Podcast feed. You can find us on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, which I have to keep saying because I only found out we were on there like 2 weeks ago, and everywhere else podcasts can be found. We also have the Patreon. It's a Wonderful Podcast on patreon.com if you would like to support us in that way and are feeling particularly generous. Go on there, find the tier that's right for you. Whole bunch of fun stuff we have on the Patreon. We also have the YouTube channel, It's a Wonderful Podcast on YouTube. We are looking to do a couple of Christmas based watch alongs before the big day itself. Maybe they'll be fun. I mean, they'll definitely be fun, but maybe they'll be extra specially fun for undisclosed reasons, hopefully. But we also have other stuff going on the YouTube channel as well, and probably brand new stuff coming in the new year. I'm testing out some things anyway, so there's a little bit of a tease for something that probably will happen anyway. I'm being very vague, meaningfully so. You can find the show on Twitter at It's a Wonderful One. Find me on Twitter at The Purple Don with a 3 instead of the E in there, because 3 is the magic number on Instagram at justthepurpledon, and Nolan, all your joyful and triumphant stuff is where.
You can find me at NolanDean27 on Twitter, also the Glasgow Kid 1 on Twitter. I'm going to be performing again next Wednesday at the Keg in Paisley. Maybe testing out some Christmas comedy material, or perhaps some film-related material. I know there's a specific musical coming out next week that a lot of people have strong opinions on that I might do a couple of jokes about. So we'll see what's going on there. And just check me out at the Glasgow Kid on YouTube as well. I put some clips from my stand-up up there. The James Corden jokes are getting a lot of good responses. I've not been recognised in Scotland yet, but thankfully that's just because I've been wearing a mask with Sub-Zero's face on it.
Well, I think now is about the right time for me to say thank you, everyone, for listening to this nonsense episode of It's a Wonderful Podcast. I appreciate you greatly. We appreciate you greatly. You are a wonderful person. Truly. Goodbye. Until next time. Nolan, see us out.
I'm going to get into the Christmas spirit right now and give you a little Christmas carol.
Oh, dear.
On the 12th day of Christmas, my friends just gave to me all their COVID symptoms.
Just that. Just that. Nothing else. That's it.
Oh, no. There's more.
Perfect.
Gifts they got on special. Nice. Some NFTs. A failed crypto account. Gold-flaked Christmas turkeys.
What? What's that? What's... I don't even know what that is.
A planet that's burning. Two-way authentication. Instagram influencers. Four harassment cases, three racist royals, two COVID lockdowns, and a government that's royally fucking me.
Well, there's only one of us trying to bring joy this Christmas, isn't there, you miserable, miserable person? Bye.